Hey, podcast listeners, Scott Weingart here, and this is the MCRIT Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about, pardon me, I couldn't help but overhear, or how to transform from an asshole to an acehole on Twitter. I'll explain all that very shortly. But before we get there, a mild diversion to discuss sepsis. Now, I'm going to say tentatively, and without much assurance, that we have won. Well, no, I could say for sure we have won. I do not know if we had any actual bearing on the winning, is what my tentative nature actually refers to. But, okay, maybe I'll explain. It seems that ACEP, the American College of Emergency Physicians, and Society of Critical Care Medicine have released a joint statement saying that they do not endorse the one-hour Surviving Sepsis campaign bundle, which is what we've been asking for with your help, with a petition with over 5,000 names on it. We've been asking them to do exactly that, and they have. Now, I don't know if there is any connection between our petition and the efforts of the outspoken MCRIT team and all of our other friends on other social media outlets, whether we have actually made the difference, or this would have happened anyway, or it had nothing to do with it, and they didn't even know that we were protesting in our own little unique Web 2.0 way. But I'm going to go with, and I hope you'll agree with me, that our efforts, our petitions, our work throughout all of Foam was what made the difference. I'm going for that. I'm going to say we won. We, being the Foam Ed community, have won against the silliness that was the one-hour bundle. So, yay, pat yourself on the back if you sign that petition. Feel shame if you had no part in this, but yet disagreed, for you could have been part of the team that helped push out a totally non-evidence-based, kind of silly publication and thrust that is the one-hour bundle. All right, yay. But let's get to the meat of this episode. For a while now, the only interactive social media I've really participated in has been Twitter. And I even participated in that outlet, begrudgingly. I find Twitter to be flawed severely, and that's exactly what we'll talk about in this episode. But before we get there, I want to talk about a little bit on the reasons why I don't participate in any of the other interactive social media outlets. Now, in preparation for this episode, I did a lot of reading on various books, and eventually, and I have to make the apology, I'm not going to have the show notes for this episode up in any usable form for at least a couple days, just due to time crunch, I'm sorry. But they will eventually be there, the books that I'm talking about and the links and all the good stuff. But for now, I could say I've been reading many books to try to get a better handle on the kind of unformed thoughts on why I think social media, the interactive social media at least, is very dangerous and bad and screwing up our brains. And luckily, I'm kind of riding the wave of gestalt on these same issues because there's been a backlash across the tech world against interactive social media. And, you know, I'm kind of riding their wave, because as I've been feeling these things, a lot of other people smarter than me are coming on board in the tech community saying the evils of these various things that they themselves may have been pushing, or things very similar that they have been pushing in Silicon Valley and the various other tech hives across the world. Facebook. Let's start there. And a lot of the books I've been reading, all of them decry Facebook. Now, why is Facebook so bad? Well, there's a few reasons, but the worst part of it is that they made the decision, and I want to say it's about 4 or 5 years now, to select what actually shows up on your timeline and exclude non-paying content producers from necessarily being able to have their stuff seen by the people who have chosen to follow them. And in lieu of those things, Facebook is using a machine learning algorithm to actually decide what goes in front of your eyes. And since Facebook is free, ostensibly, you have to ask yourself, to whose benefit is that selection? And, you know, this brings up a quote, and I can't definitively find the origins of this. And what I'm going to say is actually my own paraphrase of the quote, but I think the quote holds a lot of mental power if you really start thinking about it. And the quote is, if a product seems free, then you are the product. If a product seems free, then you are the product. What does that actually mean? It means a service like Facebook, wow, I'm not paying anything for this, and look at all the great stuff I get. They're making money off you. They're using, in the Facebook model, they're using advertiser money. But not in the old days when we had TV where they would serve one ad for everyone. They're choosing what goes in front of your eyeballs from an ad perspective. And now here's where it gets kind of evil. They're also choosing, or at least the books I've read have indicated this, the other stuff you see to make you more likely to interact in a favorable manner with the ads. So if an advertiser realizes that you are going to be made despondent by showing you a couple of specific posts, maybe some of your friends' stuff, maybe some of the places you follow, and then hit you with an ad in your timeline, and that makes other people who have been determined to be similar ilk to you based on a whole rubric of possible characteristics, makes more of those people buy or click or interact than when they don't show you that stuff, guess what that machine algorithm is going to do? It's going to show you that stuff. And so any service that selectively chooses by machine learning algorithm what you see is, in my mind, very dangerous. And so that includes Facebook. To my understanding, it includes Instagram. It definitively includes Google search. And here's one that I do interact with frequently, and I think is one of the best things of the internet, and that's YouTube. YouTube is amazing. The scope of knowledge and education that's provided for quote-unquote free there is astoundingly good and should not be eliminated. I think it is world-changing. But I don't interact with YouTube, thereby Google's algorithm telling me what it thinks I should watch. I never even look at that feed, and if there was a way to eliminate it, I would. I only watch the things that I've chosen to follow. So if there's a producer out there that I like, I subscribe to them. And even that's not enough. It used to be enough that you would then see all of their videos. You don't anymore. You have to bell them. You have to click that little bell next to subscribe. And then all of a sudden, you get a notification when they put out a new video. And that's what I watch on YouTube. Or my own search is done through a service that eliminates all of my pre-existing cookies, and therefore when I do the searches, I actually see everything out there as opposed to what Google determines I should see. This stuff, when you start talking about it to any extent, starts to feel very conspiracy theory they're out to get us. Well, guess what? As bad as you can make it sound when you're talking about this in general vernacular, if you actually delve into this stuff, and I've only done that at a most superficial level, what you feel sounds like conspiracy theory, you know, tinfoil hat craziness is actually but the tip of the iceberg. This shit is real. They are doing this stuff. In fact, Google has a webpage you could check out. It's kind of cool, on the Google Unbiasing Project. They actually manipulate the search results to make things seem to have maximal equality of outcome. And while I laud their intent, when you actually delve into it, I'm not going to spend any more time on it. It's kind of 1984, Big Brother type stuff going on here. And this is, like I say, this is only what they're publicly releasing and that actually could be gleaned by the information out there as opposed to what's actually going on in the black box of the actual algorithm. So this stuff, I think it's potentially evil. Not to mention things like Facebook are designed around a slot machine theory of human interaction, which is you don't want to give rewards every time you go to Facebook. That's been shown not to be as good as to just intermittently give you a hit of all of those good feeling chemicals to make you keep coming back and checking your Facebook continuously every 3 minutes. This is not by chance. This is built in to apps like this. Now, Instagram is the same, and when you look at the ownership of Instagram, you'll understand why. I don't participate in Instagram at all. I participate in Facebook only in that MCrit team has a page that takes auto posts and puts them up there from each time we post on the blog, and I'd get rid of that too, except a huge amount of the traffic comes from Facebook, and so that would be untenable to get rid of. If enough of you quit Facebook, maybe I could stop a presence there. Now, Where it gets interesting is places like Reddit. And I've always been a big fan of Reddit because there's no real advertising and there's no algorithm except for the things that other people vote up. And that seems kind of smart. I kind of like that. But then that's now the corollary to if you're getting the product seemingly for free, then you are the product, which is if you're getting the product seemingly for free and you are not the product, then be very wary of how these organizations will actually monetize because they're probably going to go away. So if you are not charging and you are not using your users, then the lifespan of that product is probably short. Now, the one place I do interact with, and I wish I didn't, and I probably shouldn't, is I use Gmail as my email provider, as Google mines all of my data. Yeah, it's in a they're taking away my identity allegedly, but they're not. And they're using characteristics that I share in common with other users of Gmail to match me up and do all that machine learning stuff. So I should probably not do that. In fact, you probably should not be using any free services. You should probably desperately want to pay for everything you like, because that means their business model could be that they charge you and therefore make money that way and not do any of the evil. Okay, now obviously blogs and podcasts don't yet fit into this algorithmic interactive social media morass because you are not having to pay because the person creating them has to pay, and there's no algorithm determining what you see. You choose what you see. You subscribe to an RSS feed, or you check them out intermittently by going to the site, and you listen, or you download them from Apple podcasts. You know, the point is, right now, they're clean. The books I've been reading actually allude to what is certainly going to be the future, which eventually they'll be combined feeds of the people you follow. And then instead of listening to MCRT podcasts, they'll just take excerpts out of MCRT that the machine learning algorithm thinks of, will be of interest to you. But then they'll be doing the same manipulations of if there is any form of evil that is paying them, then they will decide what excerpts you hear for specific motivations and purposes. Okay, enough conspiracy theory stuff. Let's get to Twitter, which is what this podcast is supposed to be about. Now, after years of interaction on Twitter, which has only been to the negative in terms of actual interactions, as opposed to, look, I got friends on Twitter. In fact, I was arguing with my friend Justin about this the other day, and he says, no, Twitter's great. I find all these articles and information. It's wonderful. Yeah, if your only role on Twitter is to be following people that you think are smart, and when they recommend articles or links, you check them out, and you never interact and have discourse on Twitter, you'll probably be pretty happy with it. As a content producer, your only role on Twitter is to actually put out good links of articles you came across or websites or, you know, saying that you have a new podcast out there and you never have any discourse on Twitter and you just don't look at your at mentions, Twitter probably also is really good. But the second people start using Twitter as a place to discuss or debate, it all goes to shit. And that's intentional. Twitter is fully aware of this. They want you to become an asshole. Because when you're an asshole, you use Twitter more. And a lot of other people use Twitter more. And now that they have Twitter-promoted tweets, i.e. advertising, that are determined by an algorithm and in your feed, the more you come to Twitter and the angrier you are, the better it is for Twitter. So it's all built to make you into an asshole. That is what Twitter is built to. And even people who are in person really nice and very, you know, kind in their interaction styles become assholes on Twitter. In fact, you know, one of the books I read on this stuff was called, I think it's called 10 Arguments on Why You Should Delete Your Social Media Accounts Now. It's by a Silicon Valley insider. And the book's not perfect. It's kind of written in a hyperbolic style. But I think you'll like it. And there's a lot of great information in there. And this author talks about how he's a pretty shy, introverted, non-argumentative person in real life, and he becomes an asshole on Twitter. He actually deleted his Twitter account because he realized it's making him into an asshole. Now, how does it do this? Well, the first thing Twitter does is, just based on its built-in way of letting people interact, it eliminates context. And that's designed by a couple of unique features. The short posting ability on Twitter used to be 140, now it's 280. Prevents people from really giving context. They could just make their point. But the real interesting thing about Twitter is that in general, at least the way I use it, I'm only replying to people that have actually sent me a tweet asking my opinion on something, or at least mentioning me. And then I reply to those people. But due to the nature of Twitter, any person following any of those people will also see my reply. So basically, you're not having a conversation. You're having a conversation that's being broadcast to all sorts of people that you would have had a very different amount of contextual explanation for the things you say than the people you're actually talking to. And as a result, and because of the format, those people in general will immediately go to straw man rather than steel man. Now, I've defined these terms in another podcast on how to have an online debate, which is, you know, very similar to what we're talking about right now. But to straw man is to take the worst possible interpretation, or an interpretation that's not even possible, of anything said by your opponent, and then use that as the basis for an argument you're going to go into. And so by the time you're done with your argument, your opponent could either argue the things you said or go back to the beginning and say, I never said that. But the I never said that on Twitter doesn't work out as well as in real life. Because by the time you get to that, every person following the person who's made the hyperbolic response and all of the people who are in the retweet stream of those people have already seen it and piled on with their own ridiculous straw man interpretation of the straw man interpretation. And now the only way to prevent this is to steel man, to before you ever get angry and start going off on a Twitter post, to say, what I'm hearing you say is dot, 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 is that what you are saying? And if that happened on Twitter, there'd never be any arguments on Twitter, except for the ones that actually should happen, because there's some real dickheads out there who are mean exactly the horrible things that the people think they're saying, and then by all means, destroy those people, pile on. But I'd say usually if you steel man, that doesn't happen. So now you're left with two possibilities, which is you could either just carefully craft your Twitter persona to never say anything that could make anyone angry. And I'm not saying you're saying things to make people deliberately angry, but the point is, if you say anything on Twitter that is not the most milquetoast, useless homily, it's going to make someone angry who's overhearing. You could either do that, which doesn't seem very utile, or you could just risk having these continuous straw man debates. Now, this is not even to discuss the obvious Twitter trolls. Now, gotta say, I kind of like the Twitter trolls who, when you click on their actual account, they openly tell you that they're a troll. I kind of like those folks. I don't know. I don't know why, but I think those folks are kind of enjoyable. Not, I'm sure there could be a level of turning up that dial that would quickly disabuse me of my like, but they're infrequent enough that, you know, the shit they stir is a nice diversion. And as long as you don't respond to the trolls, in general, it's pretty enjoyable. Now, then there's the sock puppet trolls. And sock puppet trolls are people who are using fake accounts that don't truly represent them, but they're not even fake and then admit that they're a joke account. They're pretending to be someone real. And those people are dangerous because you could have an entire troll thread that the person objecting to you never actually cared. They just wanted to see you get red-faced and angry. Now, how do we solve this without getting rid of your Twitter accounts? Because I think most people are not going to. Delete your Facebook account for sure. Just trust me on this one. Just delete your Facebook account. It's garbage. But Twitter, there is a potential for goodness. And how do we make that happen? Well, that's the title of this episode, which is, if you were, say, at a multidisciplinary conference like SMAC, and we're walking by, and there was a group of three or four people discussing something, and you heard something that sounded inflammatory, or something that made you upset or angry, would you go break into that group of three or four people and start going off on them? I don't think you would, because you realize that what you were actually doing was eavesdropping, and there's a very good chance that you didn't get the context of what you were hearing, and even if you did, they might be meaning it differently. I don't think, I mean, I'm sure there's some real jerks out there that would break into a conversation they had no part in and start going off on the people. But I think most of us, most of the people starting debates on Twitter would instead do something very different. And what they'd probably do is if they chose not to ignore it entirely, they'd probably go to that group and say, pardon me, I couldn't help but overhear. Are you saying? Those three words. Are you saying? And then they would repeat the thing they overheard. Now, I'd say 9 times out of 10, those 3 or 4 people would say, oh no, of course not. That's not what we meant. We were talking about this unique circumstance and this happened and it was just dealing with this one person that we all three know that you don't know who actually is a jerk. And we were just talking about that. And no, we would never apply this to you know, a specialty or a group or a gender or anything in general. No. But now that you're here, what do you think about X, Y, and Z? You know, are you saying is very powerful. That's steel manning in essence. And that's what probably should be happening for everything you read on Twitter, especially if you were never part of the original conversation. You should start off your diatribe with, are you saying? And then lay out what you think that's made you so angry, the person whose conversation you've now broken into, what you think they're saying. And if they say, yeah, jackass, that's what I'm saying, then go with both barrels. Let them have it. If on the other hand, they say, no, of course not. I would never imply that. That wasn't what I meant. Then, wow, a good conversation could ensue. So pardon me, I couldn't help but overhear. But most importantly, because no one should say that in a tweet, don't write that. Just think that in your head. Every time you're about to go off, just say, pardon me, I couldn't help but overhearing in your head. And then in the tweet, are you saying? Are you saying? And that will convert you from an asshole to an ace hole, an A-Y-S hyphen hole. A-Y-S, are you saying? And if you're an ace hole, you're not going to have very many unnecessary debates on Twitter. So please become an ace hole rather than an asshole. Now, this might sound very similar to another amazing friggin' lecture, which is Jenny Rudolph at Smack. It was just released a few weeks ago on, and I'm blanking on the name, I'll put in the show notes eventually, but the whole concept of the lecture was anytime you hear something that makes you say, what the fuck? What you should change that to in your head is, what's their frame? Because chances are they're framing the situation differently than you are. And if you ask, what's their frame? It may stop you from creating a huge in-person fight. It's the same thing on Twitter, what's their frame? But the better way to do it, instead of you trying to figure out what their frame is, though that certainly would be a helpful thought experiment, ask them what their frame is by saying, are you saying? And what this does is it converts from the golden rule to the platinum rule. The golden rule, for any biblical scholars out there, is do unto others as you would like to be done upon, or you would like to have others do upon you. I'm blanking on the exact quote because I don't use the golden rule. I think the golden rule is severely flawed. It's better than nothing. But for gosh sake, use the platinum rule, which is do unto others as others would like to be done upon, as others would like you to do to them, because everyone wants different things. Everyone needs different things. So do unto them as they'd want to be done upon. Well, how do you know? You ask. Are you saying? Now, I'll leave you with one last thought, which is, none of these debates actually should be happening on Twitter. They should be happening on a separate app. And I've been looking. There actually are, I think there's maybe 7 or 8 of them now, these online debate forums specifically designed for this purpose. None of them have been good. None of them do the things I want to do, which is to actually use machine learning for the power of good, to when you give a response before you send, to have a pop-up saying, are you steel manning? Are you actually asking your opponent what they mean, or are you just going with the least charitable interpretation of what they mean? Things that would pop up with machine learning, the cognitive biases that are inherent in your response, to ask yourself, do you really want to say this? Because you're kind of exhibiting X, Y, and Z, all of which would make your point immediately from a logical or argumentative standpoint invalid before you even say it. And if we had these forums, you could just click to a Twitter link saying, you know, I kind of disagree with what I think you're saying. Would you mind coming over to, you know, debategood.com, mental note, work on name, and let's talk about it there. Wow, that would be powerful. And I guarantee you, if you made a good one, then either Facebook or Twitter or someone would buy you out. And then it could be integrated into the Twitter app itself. I'm surprised Twitter didn't. Oh, no, I'm not, because their business model relies on people being assholes. So they don't want this, which is why you'd probably have to do it yourself. And they'd probably buy you out to then shelf that app and never let it see the light of day. Okay. I think I've gone on long enough. We're over time. So remember, don't be an asshole. Be an acehole. Scott Weingart, MCrypt Podcast, saying bye-bye.